Hello and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. And it's John again here, and I've got another fantastic interview for you this afternoon. I'm delighted to be joined by the newest member of baseball's no-hit club, a man who has pitched in the bigs for the Reds, Twins, Padres and Rockies, and pulled off his feat just this Friday gone with the Uni Lions of the CPBL in Taiwan. Welcome to Melville. How are you?
Doing good, John. Thank you for that intro. That was awesome. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Really good. Yours is an amazing story. We're gonna get into the ups and downs of your career in a bit, but it feels like we have to start with last Friday. like why else would you start in this conversation? So you threw a no-hitter. It was 142 pitches, and then they had you do a little turn afterwards. We'll talk about that as well in a second. But the first question that you want to ask anybody who's thrown a no-hitter, you're the second person actually we've had on who's thrown a no-hitter, which is unusual. There aren't too many of you. When did you think, at what point in that game did you start thinking, I know what's happening here. I might just be able to do this.
Honestly, early on, you know, for those who watch no hitters in the past, you always see the defense make some really ridiculous plays. Mm. And right off the gate, the first inning, our center fielder made a diving catch for the third out of the inning. And that's just kind of like the spark you want to see. And, you know, I'm not going out there every time to throw a no hitter, but, you know, you can kind of sense something special is going to happen that day.
The last guy that we had on who threw a no hitter was Rick Teasley, who's also played in Taiwan, and he did it in the Atlantic League for Somerset. And when we spoke to Rick about it, he said he felt even in his warm up, I've got it today. I've got the stuff. Was it the same for you? Were you thinking, it's going exactly where I want it today?
Yeah, you could kind of tell early on, even days before, if you have a good bullpen, and then you carry it into the pregame bullpen. I'm just hitting your spots, and you know, guys are kind of looking at you a certain way. Coach is giving you the thumbs up, you know, every kind of good vibes all around. You know, the sun's shining, the birds are chirping a little bit different, you know, just kind of all that stuff kind of adds up and, you know, ends up being a good result.
Yeah, I absolutely bet it does. And so you, we said already that before we started recording the conversation that you didn't realize until you spoke to one of your teammates afterwards that you'd gone 142 pitches. At no point were you thinking, you know, this is sort of hurting, you know, I'm kind of been left in here, yeah, because of the event that's currently unfolding in front of us.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of all about feel, I guess, at my age and kind of the league I'm in. We get a little bit more time off. So we get about sometimes 6 to 8, sometimes 9 days off from in between starts. You know, mm-hmm. we're still practicing and whatnot in between starts, but you get a little extra time off and you're kind of at the age, a little bit older, you know, in certain situations, you don't necessarily want to go to the bullpen too early. So your mindset in this league for me is to, you know, go as long as I can, you know, physically. You know, you got to have to pry the ball out of my hands. And we got a great coach, you know, Jamie, our pitching coach. He's been in the big leagues for a long time. And, you know, he knows when special things are going on. It's just kind of all worked out that day to where I was feeling great and just kind of kept going. And then after the game, I pulled Jamie over. He was like, how many pitches was that? He's like, oh, like 140. I was like, oh, felt somewhere around there.
So. That must have been the, you know, thinking like, you know, through your career, how you'll have been looked after in the various systems. When was the last time you threw 140 pitches? You know, you didn't grow up in the sort of in Japan. You weren't doing this as an 8-year-old.
No. that was the first time I've been that far in competition. Didn't feel anything too different. I think as far as pitching goes, you get to an efficiency during the game to where you're throwing less of those stressful pitches. You know, you can watch a game. You'll see a catcher set up right here. Mm-hmm. And the guy misses and it's 2 or 3 feet here. Mm-hmm. Well, in my opinion, that's, you know, kind of a sequencing pattern, a little bit off, kind of like a bad tee shot in golf. You know, mm-hmm. you just kind of shank one here and there. You're not going to feel too good after that. So I didn't have too many of those shanks, so to speak, during that outing, in my opinion. So I think I was able to, you know, have some very efficient pitches during the game that kind of, didn't necessarily add up as a usual game. Wasn't as stressful, I didn't have a lot of runners on base most of the time. So, those stressful pitches weren't necessarily there. So I was able to, go to 140 pretty easily. Felt good.
And you've been out in Taiwan for almost a year in terms of competition now. You're probably quite used to the way that they like to put the bat on the ball. You're going to have a lot of long counts, aren't you? So, maybe not 140, but for if you're going six or seven, you're up at 100 pitches every time, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a tough offensive league, and guys battle, hitters battle. You don't get necessarily the same reaction out of hitters here as you do in the States, and it can weigh you down. They can weigh you down pretty easily.
And so let's go back to this game particularly. What rituals were you up to when it sort of got to the sixth inning and this looked like it might be in shock? Because you were the second one in a week. So Mike Lawrie took one into the seventh earlier in the week, and everyone was keeping their distance from him, and he was laser focused. Was it the same with you, or were you trying to sort of horse around a bit with your teammates to try and keep loose?
Yeah, so I mean, every inning I came back into the dugout, there would be less people sitting next to me, and so it just kind of like the space kind of grew and grew and grew around me. I was like, oh, okay, like it didn't add any more pressure or anything like that. But everybody was getting a little excited, and definitely the crowd for sure. Every inning I went back out there, the crowd just seemed to get louder and louder, just kind of chant my name as I went out there. So. It was really special to do it at home in front of the Lions fans too, and Tainan and everything.
Yeah, I rewatched the ninth inning again earlier on this afternoon, having seen the last three innings on Friday morning UK time, and I think it's the quietest Taiwanese crowd I've ever heard. Like they're all like holding their breath in that ninth inning. Could you feel that? Could you feel the tension there, or were you just out there doing your thing?
Yeah, because that first out, after you hear that, after you get that first out, it's everybody's cheering. I mean, everybody's excited, kind of losing their minds almost. So, you as a pitcher, just don't mess it up, please. Please don't mess it up for all these people. Like, finish the job. Like, your defense been making amazing plays behind you all day, so now is the time to finish it. And capped it off, which was awesome, and just a lot of cheering after that. Got a almost dog piled out in the field, which was pretty special too. So a lot of cool energy.
You mentioned the defense, and you mentioned that the center fielder Chen Xie-hsien made an amazing catch in sprawling in front of him in the first inning, and then there were two incredible infield defense plays from your first and second baseman Cao Kuo-Xing and Yang Xiaowei, weren't they? Like I hope you well, it's not for me to say, but I'm sure you gave them a pat on the back for keeping you in there after that.
I bought him a drink after the game for sure. Just thanks, man. It's a real team effort. I get the no hitter, but our offense exploded that game, and our defense just did an amazing job, and just all around team effort to seal the deal.
Yeah, I mean that was particularly the unassisted play at first was that was absolutely smoked. He was like, "Yeah, I know what I've got to do here." I don't think he'd thrown himself that hard for a couple of years.
No, the hitter even called it. Like, he hit the ball, and he's like, I heard the hitter, like, he yelled, I don't know what he yelled, but he yelled something like, yeah, like, gotcha, like, finally got the hit. And nope, first baseman of the play, it was awesome.
I've always found that odd. You must have been on both sides when something like this is going on. Like the sort of the Schadenfreude of the hitting team, just so desperate. Like I always think when you're watching the MLB games and you get the highlight clips and people dancing in the dugout and they break up a no hitter in the ninth, it just feels like the most unsportsmanlike thing ever.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we're winning by a good amount of, runs that game. So, I mean, if they had gotten a hit, I mean, they would have been cheering too. I wouldn't have, been mad at them or anything like that. But it was a good competition. It was a good game, and they were definitely trying hard. So.
Yeah, oh, they were, and It's very sporting of you to say that. I think I'd have been sick as a dog if that had happened to me.
Oh.
We'll just round out conversation about this by talking about what happened after the game. You said that there was a pile on, you know, a lot of great energy. And then there's this bizarre ritual that people who are au fait with the Taiwanese Baseball League will know all about, that the player of the game has to come out and have a ceremony. And quite often they make you do a dance. I can't imagine that your mind was particularly in the, yeah, this is exactly what I want to go and do now.
Well, it wasn't my first rodeo. I had a dance last year, that initial dance, and that was kind of hectic. I pitched a great game and I got the MVP of the game. And so they bring you out after, they ask you a few questions and then you pull a few raffle tickets for the crowd. And, you know, then they kick on the music and you're supposed to dance. And you know what? Most of the time they have the cheerleading team beside you, and they also have the cheerleading kind of manager. She's giving you signs from the front, so you kind of know what to do. First time out there last year, they said, nope, you're solo. So I had to solo dance this whole thing, and no one was around me. It was just camera on me, solo dancing as best as I could, and to this music I'd never heard of that didn't necessarily have a good beat to dance to. And that was very stressful. So this time, thankfully, the manager was there and she kind of coached me through it. And I think I did a pretty good job. I don't know. The video looks pretty good.
Well, you started off quite tentatively, didn't you? You're like, I'm not quite sure how to follow. Am I going the same way as you, or am I going like the opposite way? But you definitely got into it, right? By the end, you were like, oh, can we go again, basically?
Yeah. No, time definitely slows down, though. I mean, it feels like it's like 10 or 15 seconds, but it feels like a minute. And you try to put a smile on, and you know it's a little bit tense, and you know you kind of wish you might have had a beer before, but you know you just got done with the game, you're kind of exhausted, you know, you're a little bit, you know, head's all spinning and all over the place, and you know it's a crazy experience, but you know it's good because the fans will join in, and you know everybody is kind of having a good time. It's a lot of fun.
And you got to do it in one of the more psychedelic uniforms you'll get to see in World Baseball. It was Lions Ultraman weekend. For those who aren't aware of Ultraman, it's a quite famous sort of youngsters kids TV show over in Taiwan and East Asia, isn't it? So and they had special uniforms that had you kitted out like Ultraman. So you know, there in posterity, Tim Melville, when he threw his no hitter, was dressed as an action figure. Probably not how you would have portrayed it yourself.
No. Those uniforms are pretty special. I'll definitely keep that one hanging up in the house. You know, it was awesome because my wife's here with me. So she was able to see me, you know, pitch the game and see me dance afterwards, get some good pictures of me. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. And I read after the game that the last person who pitched a no-hitter also did it on Ultraman night. And it was Ryan Verdugo, who's a friend of yours. Just like baseball is just a crazy thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so crazy. I think they only do this Ultraman once or twice a year. I'm not too sure, but, you know, to have it, I believe we were 9-0. I mean, we had won 9 games. We hadn't lost a game in the uniforms. Mm-hmm. You know, my buddy Verdugo threw a perfect game in the uniform, and I just happened to throw a no hitter. I don't know, something special about him. Maybe we'll change our names next year.
The Tainan Ultramen, definitely. That's who you're going to be coming back and pitching for.
Yeah, 100%.
So I want to talk a little bit about how you ended up in Taiwan in a bit, but I thought we'll talk a little bit about your career in the States and how you came to be in Taiwan in 2020 for your first go around. So you were drafted in the Royals in 2009, sorry. So 2009, just over 12 years ago.
2008, actually.
2008.
First year in Pro Bowl was 2009.
So, and you came up through that Royal system with the guys who went on to become the core of that World Series team, really, didn't you? So Eric Hosmer, Alex Gordon, Salvi Perez, Danny Duffy. That must have been an amazing system to be a part of with all these, you know, guys your age. And Will Myers was there as well, who's really raking on the Padres now. So, you know, all guys your age, clearly that was going to be a special team. You must have known that whilst you were part of it.
Yeah, it was amazing. And, you know, day one, the Royals organization, they were just preaching, you know, we're going to win a championship. You know, that's what we're doing every day. Might not happen this year, but we're always going to try and build this organization from low A rookie ball up to the big leagues as just being a championship organization. So they did what they needed to do, and they won. I couldn't have been happier for, you know, all my friends who were able to just – be in that moment. And it's, I don't know, it's just a cool thing for the organization. They worked really hard to get there. Just really happy for him. You know, I was with the Tigers when they won it, but you know, I was still happy for everybody back with the organization.
And, you know, you'll have seen firsthand one of the touchstones of that team, which everyone talks about when they won in 2015, was how hard they worked. Like guys like Hosmer, guys like Gordon, sure, like incredibly good baseball players, but guys who really had to go out and grind every day, not sort of the ones who were like, you know, the natural best player in their high school team, right?
Yeah, no, Hosmer was pretty good out of high school, but I think, you know, when you get to the professional level, you got to be able to take it up a notch. You know, you got other people involved. I think in high school, you know, you're able to get away with kind of having that one player is just amazing. You know, you can kind of carry a team, and you know, the major leagues, you might not have that person who's that next level guy to carry everybody. So you're going to need to have, you know, four or five guys who are just a tick underneath, but you know, just work together as a team. I mean, I just remember from the 15 World Series, even the playoffs the year before, is just how much fun they're having. And, you know, that was there from day one. We were just all good friends within the organization, coming up together. We were just able to, you know, after the game, just go hang out, play some video games together, whatever. You know, it was just having that team bond. And, you know, I've been on multiple teams with that. And, you know, our team right now, the Indy Lions, we kind of got the same vibe. And I think that's why we won last year, which, you know, you just have that team camaraderie to, you know, just hang out and have fun, man. Baseball is just such a great sport to just, you know, hang out with the guys and just have a good time. And, you know, through the ups and downs, you know, you just try to make the downs a little bit shorter and just have, you know, have the best of times when the going's good. So it's a good thing to win, you know, that championship, you know, to make it all the way with everybody through the season, through the ups and downs. You know, it's crazy to look back when stuff like that happens, but yeah, you know, that's the beauty of the sport. It's awesome.
And you, as you said, you were pitching in AAA for the Tigers in 2015. You'd moved on.
Yeah.
So what was that feeling for you? I mean, obviously you're really pleased for your friends, but was it not a little bittersweet that you didn't get to experience it yourself?
Yeah, a little bit, but you know, I'm more so happy for you know, my teammates, you know, my former teammates. But I think that's kind of how it is. You know, if you talk to people about like just, you know, it's kind of like the ideal team mentality to have with individuals on your team is just people looking out for each other and caring about someone else because they understand that that person is doing the same for them, you know? So it's just that symbiotic relationship. So I couldn't have been more happier for those guys. And, you know, not only the guys on the team, but the people in the front office, you know, I have relationships with, you know, just so happy for them and their families. And, you know, everybody's time kind of comes and goes. And so it's just, I'm not jealous at all. I've had great moments in my career, so I'm very happy for them, though.
Yeah, I mean, we've been fortunate enough to speak to a few players on the podcast, and anyone who's been involved with the Royals just doesn't have a bad word to say about that organization. Just like it's one big family from rookie ball right through to the big league club.
Yeah, definitely. Bleed Royal Blue. That's what they preach, and that's what they believe in, so.
Absolutely. So you spent a year in AAA with Detroit, and then you got your first taste of the big leagues with the Cincinnati Reds. So going to ask you a couple of questions about playing in AAA there because of some of the players who you docked in with, but then talk about your time with the bigs. So you sure. mentioned before we started recording that your catcher in AAA was Great Britain catcher of yesteryear, Chris Bassett. So yes. What was it like being around Chris and thinking, goodness, like they have baseball in Britain?
He's one of the funniest guys I've ever met, you know, in pro ball. Just great sense of humor. But yeah, I think he had like a big, you know, what was it, the Union Jack, right? The flag?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's the name of the flag. Yeah, big batting bag with the flag. I'm like, hey, man, like what? Where'd this come from? And, you know, he told me the story and, you know, he's on Team Britain and all this stuff. I'm like, dude, that's so cool, man. And, you know, you just never know who you're going to run into. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's funny. Like guys who find out that we have a squad and they're like, can I play in the World Baseball Classic for you? We had Darren Downs on last year. He's also pitched in Taiwan and it took him until he was 35 years old that he realized Great Britain had a baseball club that he could play internationally for because his mom is from over here. Yeah. Chris Bassett, I have one of his bats. He sent me one of his bats from Louisville, which he signed God Save the Queen. So, you know, good to see
That's
his patriotism
awesome.
Hasn't died.
That's so cool, man.
And a couple of guys who you were in the bullpen there with Louisville were guys. Well, I think they were starters at the time. They're now showing their style in the big leagues in Amir Garrett and TJ Antone. Did you know back then that those were, you know, studs of the future?
TJ, I don't remember too much about TJ, but definitely Amir. I mean, mm-hmm. his personality was turned on to 110 every day. And didn't really turn off when he left the baseball field either. So, you know, it's the type of guy who's just extremely driven and confident in himself to get the job done. So, and he's doing it. So, yeah, no doubt. he was awesome to be around. I mean, because he's the guy, if a guy who walks into the room, he's going to, you know, you're going to turn your head real quick and he's, you know, he's going to get your blood flowing. He's going to get you ready to go, run through a brick wall, you know, type of teammate. So he's a cool guy to be around for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he is. I mean, when he's on the mound, he just got so much presence, so much charisma. Like, one of these guys who's just good for the game of baseball, isn't he? You know, just the way he goes about his business, doesn't keep his mouth shut. I think it's a good thing. I love it.
Yeah, you got to be careful, you know. Someone might, you know. If you're trying to, you know, step on his turf a little bit, he might, you know, let you know where you're at. So I like it. It was a little spice to the game.
It certainly does. So you started with the bats. You were called up to the big club in that year. What was that like for you? What was the story? I always love to hear the story about the first call up. So what was it for you and how did you feel?
You know, I was in camp. It was a new team, the mm-hmm. Reds, and, you know, just trying to keep my head down in big league camp and just do my thing. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to stick around. I was like one of the last minor league guys. I wasn't on the 40 man or anything mm-hmm. like that. So, you know, fortunate enough, the organization just gave me an opportunity in camp to pitch, and they liked me enough to keep me around until basically the last day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I got sent to AAA, and I was set to start in AAA, but then I got called up to the big league. So it was, mm-hmm. I think it was like 4 days after I got sent down. And it was in Toledo. We're about to start, and our game had just gotten snowed out. It was Toledo, Ohio. Our game got snowed out, and I get called into DeShields' office, our manager, and said, "You're going to the big leagues." And I said, "You're effing kidding me! Like, this is the worst prank ever. You can pull, you know, like all this stuff." I didn't believe him at all. And it's just so much stuff going on. Games canceled, snow, and I get called to the big leagues. How do I get to the big leagues? I'm supposed to pitch in a few days. Like, all this stuff. I got to call my parents. And it's just like this whole mess of a thing. And I'm in Toledo, Ohio, and then I'm supposed to go to Cincinnati, Ohio. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, could I take a flight? Or, like, could I take a car? And the best option was a rental car. And I'm kind of like a weather guy, too. And I looked at my phone and kind of determined my route. And I'm looking at this snowstorm, and I'm like, it's supposed to dump, you know, 6+ inches or something. I think the highways are going to be closed in the next 2 to 3 hours. And I'm like, I have to leave, like, literally right now to be able to get there a day before, you know, or I'm going to get the day before my start. And I'd rather, like, to get there, like, at least a day and a half or 2 days before my start to kind of get acclimated. So I just hopped in a car, and, you know, I'm calling people the whole way down. It's like literally a blizzard out. And I'm like, I'm not going to make it. Like, something terrible is going to happen, and I'm not going to make my big league start. You know, all this stuff's running through your head. Adrenaline's through the roof. I'm just blaring music, rolling down the highway in Ohio in the middle of this blizzard. And luckily, I made it to Cincinnati and made my first start against the Pirates. And yeah, went all right. Didn't get the win, but the team got the win, which is awesome. And I don't know. It was a cool experience, but yeah, it had been a lot coming because I got drafted in 2008, so that was 2016. So about 8 years of just kind of chipping away at it, and I was able to, you know, say I was a big leaguer. So really special.
Yeah, I bet. And did you know, given the weather, did the family manage to get there? Did they manage to make it in, or were they, you know, snowbound themselves?
Oh yeah, the Millville clan is, you know, rain, sleet, or snow, they're gonna be there for you. So a lot of my family made it out from Virginia, and it was awesome. And one of my best friends, Taylor Perkins, made it out from Dinwiddie, Virginia, with his dad and his wife, and it was really special to have, you know, all these people there just from my journey, you know, to see my opening, you know, big league debut and everything like that. It was really special, and you know, my mom was there, and it was I don't know. Really, really just a great moment for everybody just to kind of witness it and not rag on me so much. Like, when are you going to be in the big leagues? I'm like, well, now I'm in the big leagues. So answer that question. You know, I don't have to answer that question every time I go home for Christmas anymore. So it was good.
So I want to ask you about just one individual who you got to play. I bet you can guess which one I want to ask you about. A favorite of our podcast, the most different cat in all of baseball, Joseph Votto. What was it like being in camp and in the clubhouse with one of the elite characters in professional baseball?
He's the man. I mean,
Yeah.
to say the least. You hear just kind of like he's like a mafia boss, or like he's just is the don, he's the jefe. He's just he takes care of everybody and everything. Any situation, he'll take care of it. He's just the coolest cat in the room. Yeah, I don't know, just a lot of cool little moments. Just with him that we're just like, man, this guy is just like walking on water. He's just like he's in his own world, but he's at the same time he's so gravitational. You just want to be around him, and it's just just kind of like a special person and a special player on the field as well. It's just very entertaining, highly entertaining individual who just thinks at the highest level of baseball IQ, but also just a comedian. I mean, his jokes are just hilarious, and you think they come out of left field, or you think he's been like sitting on a joke all night. Like you can't tell, but it's just some people get it, some people don't get it. It hits you the next day, stuff like that, and you're just like, man, that's just some special stuff. He's a cool guy.
Yeah, he definitely is. And how did it feel for you as a pro player, obviously in a big football town as well, and a big basketball town with the Bearcats, to be around a professional sports franchise where like one guy has that gravitational pull? Like, was it different from the other clubs that you played in, both at the major leagues and everywhere else? Was because it's not the biggest city, like it's a big city, but it's from a baseball perspective, it's his town, right?
I guess the only other guy I could say that was comparable was Joe Mauer. I played with the Twins for one day. I played with the Twins for one day, but that's all it took to be like I see the exact same thing going on. I saw him today going it here with the Twins. Joe Mauer is the man, and humble, soft-spoken guy who's just gonna right this ship if it gets off course. And I feel like those gentlemen just took extreme responsibility and care for the team and everybody around them in that clubhouse. And so for a town with different teams and different sports, I think true fans of just overall sports can see when there's an individual like that on your team and just make you feel good inside, make you feel good to be a part of this organization as a fan or as a player. Just kind of gives that extra just proudness, just puff up your chest a little bit, just say, hey man, we're the Reds, or hey, we're the Twins, and it's Joe Mauer's team, it's Joey Votto's team. We're proud to be proud to be a part of it. So
Yeah, exactly. So you spent time between 2016, 2017 with three different major league clubs, with the Reds, and then in 2017 with the Twins and the Padres. And you'd spent quite a long time working through the minors. You'd pitched a couple of full seasons at AAA and done really well there. And everyone says, that jump from AAA to the majors is a real leap. Like, what was your view of it? I mean, what was different for you? I mean, obviously the aura, the crowds are all different, but what was your process in terms of coming to understand, like, and you had your scuffles in those 2 years. We'll talk about Colorado, which was a different story in a minute, but was there any point at which you thought, goodness, I don't know, this is different gravy?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that first time with the Reds didn't go as expected. My second start was absolutely horrendous. I pitched in St. Louis. I had gone to high school in St. Louis. A lot of different variables there. I'd watched the Cardinals a bunch of times. I'd been to the stadium a bunch of times, but I knew people I was facing. And it just had an extreme level of variables. And so, the next time up was with the Twins, and just kind of the same thing. I'd been to this ballpark before. There's cameras, there's all this stuff, and I'd been in AAA all year. I'd started the year in indie ball, and it's like the list just goes on and on, right? Like you could just name off all these things that are going on at the moment, and they're all variables in my opinion. And I think the difference once you get to the big leagues is, are you able to separate yourself from those variables and just do your job, execute? And for me, my job is just to throw strikes and just to execute a pitch and throw one strike and then focus on the next strike. And soon enough, that list just kind of disappears. It's very nice, and you have a lot of family, friends, and reporters telling you all these different things. But if you're able to kind of go through your day and not necessarily pay attention to that list of cool stuff, which is, it's great stuff, but like you kind of focus on your list of what you're supposed to do every day, how you're supposed to prepare, how you're supposed to eat, what time you're supposed to go to bed, and you really are able to learn how to focus. That's kind of the name of the game. And at the higher levels, there's just more variables, more lights, more TV cameras, a little bit bigger stadium, and you just kind of separate yourself from those, and you find yourself in a good place, I think.
And so your 2017, particularly when you were with two different big league clubs, and as you said, you also spent time with the Ducks in the Atlantic League. How do you is that just how you work through that? Is it this is the same game? I have to do the same thing. I have to get the ball and I have to throw it at 90 miles an hour over the corner of this square that's drawn in the air. Is that how a guy like you approaches that? One minute I'm in the bullpen with the Twins, the next minute I'm on Long Island.
You always try to look for examples of guys who have had success, the big leagues, kind of transferring from minor leagues. One of my guys that I kind of looked up to was Steven Strasburg. He had that great first game in Washington, D.C. And I believe one of his quotes after the game was someone told him, "Hey man, it's the same game." I mean, it's the same game, and it's a really simple statement, but you have to really think about it a little bit more. Like, it's the same game, but how can I make it the same game? Because, like I said, all these things are going to come and try to change the game for you. So I think that year with the Ducks was, a lot less fans, no cameras, a lot less lights, but the game was still the same, right? So it's like, how am I going to approach this game? What is my process going to be? And I think I really figured that early on that year, and I really stuck to it. I didn't change my process at all that year. A few things, mechanically you try to improve on and stuff like that. And but as far as how you're approaching a game and how you're reacting to situations in the game, it didn't really change throughout the year. I was able to stay more kind of level throughout the year, no matter what level I was moving up. Independent ball, AAA, big leagues, my just emotions, how I was reacting to stuff was staying very much the same. And so I just had a more understanding of how I wanted to approach the game and how I wanted to react.
And I think what particularly people over here don't understand, I think it's more common knowledge in the States, maybe more so amongst baseball hard noses like I am. That's like a really good level of competition. Like you are, every second guy who you're throwing the ball to in that level is guy with maybe a couple of years of big league time, right?
Yeah, it's really, really good competition. So margin for error is extremely small.
It is. And so I want to talk about 2019 and then circle back to end the conversation in Taiwan. So your 2019, there's a really good podcast that you did with John Boy and Jake and Trevor Plouffe from just over a year ago before you went out to Taiwan about your 2019, because it's, in and of itself, like one of those Cinderella stories that you can only get in baseball. So you started the year working in a barbecue restaurant in Phoenix, right? In Little Miss Barbecue in Phoenix. And you ended it as, one of the feel-good stories of the Colorado Rockies season. So yeah, talk us through it in classic, classic question from a baseball reporter. Talk to me about your 2019 and how it looked from your perspective.
Oh, it was one of the best years of my life. I go into the off season every year, and I usually train, and sometimes drive Uber or something like that. But mostly, I'm just playing golf and relaxing because I've been traveling all year. So this particular year, I decided to kind of look elsewhere for something to do in the afternoons. And there's a barbecue restaurant nearby I'd frequented, and I like to cook myself. I'm pretty I'm okay. I'm a decent cook. And I noticed on their Instagram that they were going to open up a new location. And this is a mom and pop restaurant. This isn't a chain. This isn't like a national chain. It's a husband and wife, and Scott and Becky Holmes, and their love for barbecue eventually turned into their first restaurant, which did very well in Phoenix. And some consider it one of the top 10 barbecue restaurants in the nation. But it's a very small joint. And you kind of walk in there and you're like really confused at the line, but as soon as you try the food, you're like, I've never had anything like this before in my life. This is completely different. And the food is made from scratch every day. Whatever they don't use, they throw out or give away, but it's usually all sold out. The food is typically, yeah, the meat is usually gone. Anyways, I digress. I love this place. I could talk about it all day.
So
So
go for it.
I wanted to work there. I felt like it connected to me as like a person I want to be. I'm a pretty simple guy, and I love food, and I love community, and I love just having a good vibe. And I walk in there to their second location to do an interview. I say, hey, I've been playing pro baseball for like 10 years now, and I worked at a Ruby Tuesdays, which is an American restaurant. When I was in high school, I was like a salad boy. So that's my extent of like the culinary arts. But they kind of looked at me up and down, and they said, all right, yeah, we'll give you a shot and all this stuff. And these guys are just, I mean, on my pedestal, I eat all over the country. These guys are at the top. So they
They're
have all the
the
respect.
Steven Strasburg of barbecue, right?
Amazing. Amazing. And I'm just like, yes, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. Like, whatever you want me to do. And I'm 6'4", 250, cleaning the toilets, taking out the trash, cleaning the smokers in the back, and piling up all the firewood, whatever jobs they want me to do. Mainly they had me in the cashier. I don't think they trusted me anywhere near the food as much as I wanted. But I worked there for a few months and kind of got out of my shell a little bit, because baseball's a little bit different job than working in the restaurant industry. So talk to people, you kind of open up a little bit more, learn how to strike up conversations immediately with people you don't even know, and to make them feel comfortable, and to make them feel, a part of this thing. So that was my experience all off season. And I was still training, and I still expected to play the next year. But I didn't get any calls. No one came forward with any affiliated jobs. So I went back to independent ball back in New York to my team, the Long Island Ducks. And I had some great connections there, and just kind of it felt like 2017 all over again. Just what's my process going to be, and stick to my process and see where this takes us. So before I went to Long Island, me and my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, went to a Arizona Diamondbacks baseball game, and they were playing the Boston Red Sox. And one of my best friends is one of my good friends, Jackie Bradley Jr. We grew up playing baseball together, so I get to see Jackie, and the thoughts are running through your head like, why? Well, I'm sitting in the stands, guy I grew up was playing out there, man. It's just, oh man, I just see myself pitching on that mound. I could pitch against these guys. Like, I know what I'm doing and all this stuff. And, so I go to indie ball, and, fortunate enough to get a call from the Rockies, not too long after I went there. And they said, hey, do you want to go to AAA with us in Albuquerque? I said, I don't care where you send me. I'm ready.
That's like
Well,
the
they took
pitcher's
me.
graveyard, right?
I
Albuquerque is
know.
known as like
Well,
no one wants to pitch in Albuquerque.
they don't tell you that on the phone call, but I'm like,
Triple
hey,
A, yeah,
just give me a plane ticket. And
I'm
you get there, and you realize it's how many feet above elevation, and you realize the wind is constantly blowing there. And you also realize in AAA they changed the AAA baseballs to the Major League Baseball, and every AAA team halfway through the season of 2019 had broken their home run records. So it's almost a recipe of like, my ERA is going to go through the roof. I'm going to have a 10 ERA for the whole year here in Albuquerque.
I'm definitely going to
But
be back in the barbecue next off season,
yeah,
right?
exactly. So that's what I'm talking about, all those variables. And I kind of had prepared for that. I felt like, all my, kind of planning and just kind of sticking to my, routine and my preparedness for every game. I'm just gonna attack every game and attack every hitter how I've done all year. And it just gave me a lot of confidence to, just kind of brush those weird home runs off my shoulder, whatever happened, whatever craziness baseball throws at you, you're able to kind of handle it a little bit better. So I was able to excel, and then fortunate enough to get the call up to Colorado, and they said I was going to start, and they said it was going to be in Phoenix. So that was kind of when things started.
That's incredible.
Kind of go kind of cool, because I had just seen a game in Phoenix, 5 months ago, 6 months ago, with my wife, and now I'm gonna go pitch against the team I was watching in Phoenix. I hadn't told anybody this. This was kind of just, it was still in my head, and it just, I don't know, it just kind of motivated me a little bit more. Obviously getting my third chance in the big leagues was, or fourth chance now, was pretty motivating as well. Four times a charm. So I went in there and had a great game, got my first win, got a hit, got a few RBIs, and just had an overall amazing day. To this day, it's weird to drive past that stadium and to think about that journey, going from watching a game to actually competing in a game there. And to winning a game, winning your first major league game in that stadium, really special and a really cool moment. Cause I had a lot of my barbecue friends there too. I don't think they honestly thought I played baseball until they saw me in the major leagues. I think they thought I was joking the entire time. I'd be like, yeah, I play major league baseball. Like, yeah, I keep scrubbing the toilet, take out the trash, whatever, buddy. Yeah, I play. I'm an astronaut. Yeah, sure, dude. Like, whatever. Making fun of me all the time. So I'm glad that happened, and that my new friends were able to, kind of experience it. I was able to blow their minds a little bit. So
yeah, like you know Jackie Bradley Jr. He won the World Series last year. He's my friend. Cool story, bro. Yeah.
You know Jackie?
I don't know him personally. He is my favorite player ever. So I'm pleased that you mentioned him. Yeah, he is the guy. I absolutely love him. I'm a Red Sox fan,
He's just the coolest cat, man. He's ever since he's kept his same, same everything ever since we were younger, man. And it's good to see him have the success and to sign the contract we did just recently. I'm very happy for him.
Oh yeah, I'm super pleased for him. If he wasn't going to be in Boston, I have a soft spot for the Brewers as well.
Thank you.
So I wanted to ask you. So you've told the story yourself. Seven innings pitch in your first game for the Rockies. Get the RBI single in there as well. Lovely stuff. And then you stick up there. You pitch. Through till the end of the season. And you got to pitch in, the most notorious baseball stadium in the world, perhaps, in Coors Field. So we talk quite a lot through this conversation. The process is the same. There are many variables. I'm just going to go up there and I'm just going to execute. Is that a bit harder when you know that everyone knows what this place is in Denver?
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of a fan of those self-help books a little bit. Uh-huh. Mental ABCs of pitching is a good one. But sometimes words on a page, it's hard to believe sometimes until you're actually in those situations. One of the main ones that I was reading constantly during that year was to turn a lot of these issues into challenges. If you look at these situations as a challenge versus, woe is me. You know what I mean? If you just see it as like a challenge, and I mean, if you look at it as a challenge, you're going to be rewarded, obviously, if you succeed in this challenge. So you're a little bit motivated a little bit differently to look at these, situations, so to speak, or variables, as just kind of hurdles just to get over. And it kind of, amps you up a little bit, gets you in a better mindset, of how I'm going to get over this hurdle versus, what is this hurdle going to do to me? How far is this ball going to go? And how many times is it going to be played on Twitter? Whatever, those are funny thoughts. And yeah, I mean, it's whatever you need to do to get through it. I highly suggest it, but I think that was the main one for me, just kind of looking at everything as a challenge, how many times can I hit this catcher, right on the mitt, in this situation, little things you try to, motivate yourself throughout the game. So,
And was there anything that you changed about your pitch mix, the pitches that you were throwing up there, the way you wanted to execute it, for pitching firstly in Albuquerque, but particularly in Denver? Because, you know, there's a lot of theories, and you said you liked to get rid of the verbiage yourself, that, you know, certain pitches spin better in Coors, certain pitches fly less in Coors. And, you know, guys like the reason that guys like John Gray and Kyle Freeland have the success that they do is because of the type of pitcher they are. Did you just try and jettison all of that, or was there anything that the pitching coach and Bud Black were telling you about what might work best for you?
Well, I can't be anybody except for me, so I think it's kind of a waste of time if you try to be like someone else all the time. You know, it's okay to emulate people and, you know, try to practice what they do, but I'm gonna be me. And I think over time, like I said, I kind of chipped away at it to you know, really get it to the basics. And I think what of all the basics kind of preached, you know, Greg Maddux is just execute, you know, execute that pitch. You know, he would count how many times he executed. He didn't necessarily call balls or strikes. He would just kind of like say 80 out of 100. You know, those are 80 pitches out of 100. I actually put the ball where I wanted to. That's all I care about. I don't really care the results of the game or anything like that. It's just all it comes down to is putting that ball where I want to. And, you know, was it 7 times out of 10? On a bad day, it's going to go, you know, going to go right. So I think it's just continuing to dwell your mind with those, you know, types of thoughts. As far as pitch mix and everything goes, and Colorado, I think I carried, what I had done all year was to continue to mess with timing. I forget those quotes. I'm not a quote guy, but you know, timing is everything with hitting. You try to mess up timing, or yeah, timing is hitting, and then pitching is learning how to mess up timing. So you try to, you know, get hitters out on their front foot. I remember one pitch I threw to Acuña Jr. I mean, Ronald Acuña Jr., the guy's amazing. All this stuff, you know, you could think about all that stuff before you get to the real meat of it, was that he was way out in front. He was way out in front of my slider. So it's like, well, I can slow my slider down, so I'm gonna throw him the slider extremely slow. And sure enough, nice ground ball, like kind of how I planned it. So you try to look at it in terms of that. And you know, I think the thing about any situation you kind of look into is you have your end picture, where you how you want things to end up, and then kind of where you're at. And there's kind of this middle area where you don't know how you're going to get there, right? So I think that's just being able to live in the moment. You know, those steps will kind of appear, you know, if you're open to them. You know, if you're prepared enough for certain things to come to life, they will all of a sudden kind of appear. That spontaneity, being on the mound, I feel like that's kind of how I pitch sometimes. Is I can throw any pitch at any time in any location. I'm kind of living in the moment, so to speak, and it gets me into trouble a lot of times. But on the good days, it gets me into you know, a good situations. So I feel like I push that way, and you know, try to live life that way too. And that's just who I am, and I just feel comfortable with it. And it's just, I'm able to sleep well at night, and you know, I'm not being haunted by home runs or anything like that because someone else made me pitch that way and it didn't go the way I wanted to. And I don't have anybody else's voice in my head. I just have my own. So I don't know. I've been through a lot of stuff to get to this point. So, and it's a very peaceful way to pitch, and I enjoy it. So,
And so for you, what was the difference between Tim Melville in 2019 and Tim Melville in 2015? You know, the Rockies vintage as opposed to the Reds vintage. Was it the journey you'd been on? Had that sort of that time you'd spent doing something different, coming out of your shell, did it have an impact on your comfort as a big league player?
Yeah, I think when you're younger, you try to like take as much on as you can, and then as you get older, you start to chip away at things, and you kind of realize, you know, all those simplistic sayings are kind of true. You know, a lot of those, you know, simple quotes are kind of the essence of what you're looking for, what you're searching for, what you're gathering all these things to kind of find. Is, you know, really, it's honestly, it's just trying to take away things daily, just trying to keep it simple. And I think that's what I learned. I learned it really early on, but I'd gotten away from it. I felt like I'd finally kind of got back to it over the last, you know, 5 years or so. And it takes time, you know, there's a lot of baggage in life. So it takes time to, you know, offload it here and there. So, But yeah, I think I got to a point where I was very just focused in the moment and just comfortable with who I was and wasn't worried about, what people were saying about me. So.
And so 2020, you were back with the Rockies, and you were
Yes.
slated you were in spring training, but then slated to start back in AAA. Were you a little disappointed about that in the first instance, that you weren't going to get a chance to start on the big league club?
No, I totally agree with, the decision. Unfortunately, I was hurt. I had fractured my rib the last year, and I was still recovering from that, so I wasn't able to pitch last spring training. And then, unfortunately, COVID hit. So that kind of goes back to what we're talking about, is, these situations kind of come and arise, and, how are you going to react and how are you going to handle them? And, the Rockies reacted the way they needed to react, and obviously MLB reacted with the minor leagues with canceling. So, I'm just going to be as prepared as I can be to play baseball whenever it starts back up. And, unfortunately, it didn't happen in America for me, but fortunately it happened overseas. So I took that opportunity and very happy I did.
And what was the outlook for you if you hadn't had the opportunity in Taiwan? So that's the first part of the question. The second part is it something you are actively pursuing? Because obviously the Taiwanese Baseball League at the time that it started was the only professional sports league playing in the world. So were you like looking at that and
Yeah.
going, maybe I could go there?
Well, when it all started, I was still with the Rockies, but it kind of happened whenever I got released with the Rockies, you start looking at different options. But the outlook, I don't know, man. I feel great. My body feels great. My situation is great at home. So it's, I think guys down the road start to think about other things when, some of that stuff starts to go a different path, so to speak. So I feel like a great situation to continue to play baseball. I don't really see any other reasons unless, there's no opportunities. But, hopefully I'll always have an opportunity somewhere, whether it's back in indie ball again. I'm totally prepared to go down that path. And, I'm type of a journeyman grinder, whatever you want to call it. Ever since I was a little kid, I just wanted to play baseball until I was old and couldn't play anymore, Nolan Ryan age. So I'm still committed to that kind of mantra daily, physical and, continuing to improve pitching repertoire and mechanics and whatnot. And I see there's a lot of potential. So, why not continue to play baseball when I still have more in the tank and I still have more room to improve? So.
And so the opportunity came on to carry on playing baseball, and it was in Taiwan. So how did that
Yeah.
come about? And I'm just sort of envisioning that phone call from your agent, like, right, you're going to Taiwan. You must have been like, what?
No, Taiwan had been on the table since probably 2017. I think they like to keep a list of guys, and when teams have spots come available, then if the situation lines up, Taiwan is available. I guess it's kind of like Japan, Korea, and then Taiwan's kind of at the bottom of the rung out here, so to speak. But I had no experience. I had friends who had been to Korea and elsewhere, and they kind of gave me a heads up on what the hitters might be like over here in Asia and just kind of a different lifestyle and stuff like that. So I was able to kind of get a sneak peek, but I didn't really listen to them that much because I felt like I had a good game plan in my life so far to handle any adversity. So I just continued to take that here last year, and I said yes, and was on a plane and in quarantine for 2 weeks and in a whole different world.
And what was that like, that quarantine period and that period of adapting? We've had a few guys who've pitched in Taiwan, and it is like, from everything that I've heard, everything that you see watching the games on the TV, it's quite different in terms of like just the place and the culture and the place that baseball, the pedestal that baseball players are placed on within that culture is even higher than, America's pastime. Like, you are the rock stars of Taiwan, aren't you?
Yeah, and I always like to give a shout out to all of our frontline workers. This pandemic's been brutal, and I think worldwide we've been battling this thing on a whole front everywhere. And Taiwan has done their thing and has fought their battle here with it as well. So as far as a 2 week quarantine, it's like, yeah, it's not ideal, but it's appropriate in order to maintain this level of so to speak, freedom, for fans to come to games here and everything like that. So For me to even get an opportunity to come here, I was extremely grateful to the country of Taiwan, the government, the people, for just continuing their discipline and handling this pandemic. So it was just a very special moment. I was extremely grateful for it. And to go through those 2 weeks was extremely tough, but I think I got through it. I only kind of went crazy once or twice and made a YouTube video of me dancing
Yes.
around the room. But the fans seemed to loved it, and I had a lot of love from the fans, and I was able to Zoom chat with my wife and everybody back home. So it worked out pretty good, but it's for the right reasons, man. And I think it was a good thing to do. And just kind of doing your part to continue to allow Taiwan to prosper and to be COVID free, so to speak. So.
And in terms of getting out there, getting on the field, how different was it? I mean, baseball is a universal sport. It's the same everywhere. It's been the theme of this conversation, but it kind of is, it's different in the way that it's approached by the fans. And as you said, you talked a bit even in your no-hitter about the way the guys want to get the bat on the ball. So your timing thing is probably quite useful for you, like, because a lot of the pitchers out there, that's how they pitch, isn't it? Trying to get people off their timing.
They pitch in and out, up and down, off speed, front, back. I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch a local pitcher and their catcher kind of work, because I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to anything. They're just up and down all around. And the hitters, man, if you try to blow them inside with a fastball and then try to brush them off, they'll be right on the plate the next pitch. So they're pretty determined. And so that's the thing you see here, is just the different style of baseball. I don't know. I think they adopted it mainly from Japanese style. I could be wrong. So you see some things there, type of training and infield practice and stuff like that. And then the fans, the fans are out there chanting while you're pitching. If you're the visiting team, if you're the home team, crickets. They don't say a word while the home team pitcher is pitching. But man, you talk about just unison and just on point. These fans have the dance and the singing, and it is going the entire game. So it is impressive to see that dedication, that level of energy, and that level intensity, and just overall just love, passion. It's very much shown here. And say what you want about kind of the Taiwanese on the train or at a restaurant, they're very reserved, but you get them in a ballpark with a couple of giant drums going and a whole row of cheerleaders, those people are going to get wild. It's awesome.
And you joined the club. They had three different overseas players at the beginning of the year, but when you joined the club, it was at pretty much the same time as two other guys in Teddy Stankovic and Brock Dixon. And you kind of became like, following it from afar, that you kind of never seen apart. It was always the three of you together. It must have been nice for you at least to, not join a brand new clubhouse on your own. Like, the three of you basically came as a package, and you're still there as the front of that rotation now.
No, it worked out great to have two other guys kind of in the same boat, and we're kind of progressing at the same level of just, I guess, assimilation, or just getting used to everything. So you kind of have the same experiences and the same questions, so you're able to kind of go through these cool experiences together, trying different food or getting lost or whatever it is. So it's kind of cool to share that with them, and to ultimately start winning games as a baseball team and overcome hurdles and stuff like that together is fun too.
I guess the only negative is that there wasn't like an old hand there to sort of show you around, because that's often when you talk to guys who
Oh
play in.
no. Well,
No?
we had Josh
Oh, you
Reneke,
had
and
Josh
he was
Reneke, of
here.
course, he was still there, right? So
Yeah.
I'm sure
And
having him
he was
around
here.
was helpful.
Yeah, he wasn't pitching. I wish he would have stayed here longer, but I think it kind of aided us a little bit to figure out things on our own, but he definitely got us on the right path. But we also have a lot of local guys here speaking English as well, and a lot of local guys who play in the States as well. So they're able to answer our questions. And then we have as far as the team goes, the Uni Lions take very good care of us. We have a translator, and we have another foreign coach, Jamie Navarro. He's from Puerto Rico, and it's just a great team. Overall team, everybody's there to help any little thing kind of you need help with, passport or visa, or just a question about where to get a haircut or something, someone's going to be there to kind of make it easier for you. They definitely have a lot of what you like to call feel, just to make you feel at home. And, it could be stressful being in a different country, not speaking the language, trying to get a hamburger. So it's like that stuff can like add up, and then you have to go pitch a game. So you want to be able to, hang out, man, just have a little extra, comfort knowing that everything's kind of taken care of, and they do a really good job. And I think that's why we did a great job last year.
Have you found any good barbecue in Tainan?
Well, I've actually found a great British spot here.
All right.
It's called the Artful Dodger. Really good fish and chips. If you're ever in Taiwan, you got to check out the Artful Dodger. They're also on Instagram as well.
I'll have to look them up. That sounds awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, they're great. They're a great spot. And, it's just, I don't know. It's nice to have places like that here. We can go watch a football match or something like that. It's close to America. It's not quite, but it's good enough. As far as for American cuisine, Hooters is the number one spot.
All right, wow,
here in Taipei for sure to go and get a little bit of the American vibe.
You guys joined the Lions were having a pretty good season. The way that Taiwan playoffs work is you win the first half and you win the second half. But when you guys came, it sort of the season turned around somewhat. You won the second half of the season and you went to the Taiwan series and won. So you got the ring. That must have been that was like coming full circle from your 2019 to be pitching and winning one of the major leagues of international baseball.
Yeah, it's crazy. Just a really surreal moment. I think when you get here, it's like, I don't know, there's so much stuff going on. Sometimes the championship is like the last thing on your list, but then you slowly start checking off those things and it's like, hey man, all we gotta do is win this championship, and then my trip to Taiwan is all set. And we definitely joked about it a lot, like early on, like, hey, wouldn't it be fun? We just like came over here and won a championship. And sure enough, that's kind of how things fell. And I think we did pretty well at the end of the season because we did a join about halfway. And I felt like we were kind of in mid-season form there at the end of the season. So I think it really, really kind of helped us excel in those stressful situations and where the other pitchers might not have. But, this is me hypothesizing. And, then our defense and our team was there, all the way up to the end as well. They're very confident. And they played very well against some good pitching. So it just kind of really came together in a beautiful way in a game seven. I mean, who doesn't want a game seven in the playoffs? It's
exactly.
Crazy, man.
And what was it an easy decision for you to head back? Was that, when they said, we want you back, was it just, cool, sign me up. I want another year of this.
Yeah, I just had such a great time here, and I didn't really have any straightforward offers from America, so I was very comfortable with coming back here, just based off of the experience I had, just kind of the feeling of security here, and also just the amount of fun I had. This is baseball in a different style than America baseball, and you kind of get tired of that American baseball sometimes. A lot of guys go play winter ball in Dominican or Mexico. I played Mexico before. This kind of feels like Mexico, a little bit lower, livelier, a little bit more music, a little bit more jokingly, having a good time. And so, why not be a part of that? And I was fortunate enough to bring my wife this time. So, get to have her out here and experience Taiwan together is something really special. So, and to, do the no-hitter last week was like, I don't know, it was awesome. Couldn't explain it anymore to have her along for this journey and to be here with the team again this year and pretty much have everybody back is have the old band back kind of vibe, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it certainly looks it, and it sounds like you're just having such a great time and taking the best advantage of the opportunity that you've got out there. Tim, it's been a real pleasure to have a conversation with you. It's pretty like getting on pretty late where you are now, so I'm gonna let you go and let you get off to bed. But before I let you go, if people want to follow along with your work out in Taiwan, where's the best place on Twitter, Instagram, and all that?
Twitter, Instagram, just look up Tim Melville. check the blue check mark. And I got a YouTube channel as well. If you want to, I pop a few videos on there. I just put up one of a Taiwanese team barbecue that we had, which was amazing. I don't know. Did you watch it? Did you check
I did
it out?
watch it, yeah.
Oh my God, dude. It was so good. It was so good. Ribs, shrimp, pork ribs. It was amazing. They know how to eat out here too.
Awesome. Tim, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Anytime, man.